Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Good morning, everyone. Morning after, live, Roberta's Heritage Radio Network.com. I think we're on episode, what, 20, 35, 36, 35? Good guess. It's been 35 weeks. We're coming up on a year anniversary. In September, this time last year, I was guest hosting for Patrick Martin's show, The Main Course, which airs on Sundays at noon. One of the cool things about doing the show from Roberta's, other than hearing tiki disco beats in the background on Sundays, is all the industry professionals who live in the area or that come here on Sundays just to hang out. Today, I'm hanging out at the bar. Someone taps me on my shoulder. Good friend Natasha David. Natasha,
hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
And Natasha, I know you've signed as many non-disclosure agreements as I have. So I'm just wondering, where are you? I haven't seen you in a while. Last time you were here, you were promoting Maison Premier.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you working these days?
I'm at Prime Meats in Carroll Gardens, and I just opened a new bar called Demimonde. It's from the same people from Death & Company. It's Alex Day and Dave Kaplan.
So very cocktail forward.
It's cocktail-y, but it's very different from any other cocktail bar that's out there right now, in that it's kind of clubby and loungy, and there's DJs, and there's, you know, like burlesque shows, and it's pretty cool.
When you say clubby and loungy, that means is there bottle service?
We're doing like our own version of bottle service.
We'll mix this whole absolute bottle into a mix of some cocktail.
Exactly.
And serve it back to you.
Exactly.
That kind of a thing?
Exactly. Kind of. We're doing, instead of bottle service, we're doing what we're calling carafe service, where we make house-made sodas, and we put booze into them. So they're like spiked house-made sodas in large format.
You have Chris Brown and Drake there running around throwing bottles at each other.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of stuff.
That was awful, right? What happened?
So where is we a year ago, mm-hmm, we spoke, and mm-hmm, 6 months after that we spoke, mm-hmm, took cocktails. Where are we now with cocktails? Was somebody just dropped?
Well,
something?
We're doing some cool stuff at Demimonde, where everything is kind of all about bubbles. And if anybody knows me, I am obsessed with anything that bubbles. I love sparkling drinks. I only drink sparkling water. I'm one of those people.
Can I ask you? Wait. Mm-hmm. So okay. Perrier. I'm going to go down.
Yeah, no, this is...
I know you're going to... Vichy, yeah. Spain's playing today. What's that? Vichy, Cataline, stuff. Yeah, but it's like you have two, mm-hmm, of those a day. Mm-hmm. It's like you eat Chinese food, mm-hmm, all the time. There's, mm-hmm, so much sodium in that stuff. But I like Perrier because it's the bot... Only... the only reason why... No, everyday stuff. I'm not talking about mixing. Because the carbonation lasts.
Okay, this is what I have to say about Perrier. Perrier is like French people,
Ricky,
right?
Bobby.
It's super aggressive, and they're just like trying to make the statement with their aggressive, awful bubbles. I hate it. I don't hate French people. Don't get me wrong. I love French people.
So what do you?
I'm a Pellegrino girl.
Okay. Okay.
I drink a lot, and I like German sparkling water. I'm, you know, from my people. I like to drink the German.
No, I definitely like Pellegrino. The only reason why I say Perrier is because I can buy it in the bodega store or whatever. I don't understand this whole plastic thing. Uh-huh. Perrier is horrible. I don't know, uh-huh, why they even bother doing that stuff. I'm recycling, whatever. I mean, it's 108 degrees right now outside. Is recycling really working with this stuff? So, bitters, is that going?
Bitters
is that,
will
is that
never
so
go
last
away.
Year? Is
no,
that like the
bitters
is
will
that
never
like,
go away.
We're going to talk to Tutulia soon, like Sherry's the new black, whatever. Is bitters like, is that so last year? Am I
no.
not cool?
You know, but now it's like, it's actually kind of like the market is so oversaturated in bitters that it's a little outrageous. It's like everybody's just taking anything they can make bitters.
Are you, as a bar, are you allowed to make it and serve it to the public? Like, if you, like, bitters, and like, is there a specific thing?
I don't know.
I'm just wondering. We can ask the Red Hook Winery guys later on in the show. They're shaking their heads, yes. But who knows what, you know,
like
Bloomberg in New York.
Yeah, like, house infusions are all weird. I mean, you know, all these health things are just,
and you're
ridiculous.
Here. You're here at Roberta's today because it is your birthday.
It was my birthday last night.
Well, happy birthday!
Thank you.
I'm always fascinated to know what someone like yourself like is doing for their birthday. Something mellow.
Actually,
something,
you know, I'm doing something. I'm really, really excited. There's a restaurant in South Williamsburg. It's called Patrizia's, and it's, you know, it's like a Brooklyn Italian restaurant. You know, everything is covered in red sauce,
yeah,
and like, you know, like the mom cooks and the dad answers the phones, and, like, the cousin washes the dishes, and, like, you know, it's, like, one of those kind of places. It's kind of greasy. It's a little mafioso.
Greasy Spoon, which is... like a Greasy Spoon Italian place, we call it, which is like sort of a dying art. I mean, there's only a few places. I mean, sort of Frankie's and 457 does a riff on, you know, sort of reinterpreted it. But those places like Gino's and Bay Ridge
it's exactly like that. So what I'm doing tonight is I'm doing, what they do is for $55, they do
$55. We got to charge $55. We got big ziti and eggplant parmesan over here. It's like that kind of a place.
Yeah, and they do... It's a 14-course family-style meal with all-you-can-drink wine and beer. And I go there for lunch sometimes because my husband just opened a bar right across the street, and during construction we would go have lunch there all the time, and I would see these people eating this ridiculous tasting menu, and I would be so jealous. So I'm making my dreams come true tonight.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I hope to see you in the studio in the next few months. Thanks again, Natasha David. We're going to move into... Actually, there was an interesting article in Eater of all places. They were talking about restaurant shares. Now, restaurant shares don't get as much publicity as they should. It's always one of the first decisions made, you know, when you're building a place, and, you know, it sort of can be very... gaudy, if you will, when you're doing fine, like when you're doing 3 or 4 star dining. Abe, I don't know if you would necessarily agree with me on this, but I think last time you had an Alexander McQueen scarf on when you were here, so you're obviously a man that knows style. So I'm wondering when the decisions maybe between chairs could be like a split second decision later could be really gaudy for fine dining. What do you think? Here we go.
I really have no knowledge of the subject.
But the other thing is the day-to-day maintenance. And I don't care, you know, who's going to your restaurant, how well-refined they are. Stuff still falls on it and stuff. And they were saying the top places, you know, Comfort, Laura Tuzzi, the guys... what's their other place? It's on, like, Greenwich Avenue, right across from Tavern on Jane...
Del Anima.
Big account. I guess. semi-big. They have a comfortable chairs, and then they go into, you know, your John George's, your Perse's, and stuff like that. But, you know, it's definitely upkeep. Actually, the World Cup is going on today, or something. Is it World Cup?
Euro Cup,
same thing. We're going to talk to our good friend, Pam Stubbs from Tertulia. Pam?
Hello. Hey, Jason.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Are you guys... showing the what is it? Who's winning the game? Who's winning the match?
Now
Pop?
That you've asked, we were showing the game, and all of a sudden our TV has turned off, and we are trying to get it back on right now. So we were in the midst of showing the game, and now we are having technical difficulties. Which
and you're operation, so do you have
kind
to,
of making me sweat a little
do
bit?
You to, do you have to? Do you have to? Do you have to go? I mean, you want me to call Time
no,
Warner?
No. I have two crack people working on it that are much more well versed in cable television than I am, so I'm hoping our CDC gets it fixed.
Do you guys have a is it a hot zone, wherever you want to, is a Wi-Fi enabled area?
Yes.
If you go on Justin TV and plug your computer into it, you can get a live feed off the internet. I don't know if you have the thing.
I don't know how you guys are broadcasting it.
So, fellow operations person, you know, we could talk shop. Real quick, have you checked all the compressors today? It's a very hot day.
Yes, it is extremely hot, and our air conditioning is doing everything it can to keep it as cool as possible in there.
it's always an issue, and I, you know, everyone can have their opinions on temperatures, but there's no possible way for anything to survive with this kind of heat.
Yeah,
I don't care
crazy.
Who your engineer is. Real quick, is Sherry the new black?
Is what?
Sherry the new black.
Is what the new black?
Sherry.
Sherry, yes, I think it is. I think it should be.
I think
everyone should be drinking sherry and, you know, enjoying it. It's a fantastic beverage, and it goes with so many different things. It can be for, you know, to start off the meal, in the middle of the meal, to end the meal, so.
When specifically should we have it? At the end, correct? I don't know. Oh, somebody scored.
And it looks like we've got the TV working again, as you can hear from the clapping.
No one scored. The TV's on.
When should you can have it anytime. If you're doing a lighter or a fino sherry, it's definitely more of an aperitif than a digestif. So it just depends on the kind of sherry you're drinking. We have a lot to offer here at Tertulia, so you should definitely pop in and drink some. And hopefully somebody here is drinking some while they watch the... Oh, it just went out again.
Oh, so they're cheering for that? Who can please these? Who can please these people?
The Euro Cup.
I'm making a prediction. Spain 14, Italy 3.
You think so? See, yeah. Spain is up 1 right now.
Oh, are they? Well, you know,
but,
I'm...
Yeah, they are up 1, but I don't know. Italy's a pretty strong team. And I've heard rumors, not that I'm the biggest soccer fan, but that Spain is not quite as good as they used to be, so...
Well, I'm rooting for Spain only because, you know, I am of Italian heritage, but I worked with Northern Italians for 3 years. And I'm rooting for Spain for that reason. I am Jason Felice.
Awesome.
I was, you know, grandparents came here from Calabria, wherever, all of South Italy. But
yep.
I work with some people from Bologna and Northern Italy, Emilia Romagna based people. And so on that fact,
You're going to root for Spain.
I'm rooting for Spain.
That's great.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day. Stay cool.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, ma'am. Let's take a break. We're going to come back with all of our friends here from Red Hook Winery.
Grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back. All the original music today is from our new friend Matt Susic. Am I pronouncing that
correctly?
That's
right.
It's
Croatian.
Croatian.
Yeah.
And we're going to be hearing some of your work in between the breaks, and then you're going to be playing an original. Is this you giving us an exclusive?
Sure.
Possibly.
Nobody's heard the recording yet, so yeah, you'll get a live performance of a song that's not recorded yet.
Well, thank you for joining us in studio today.
It's my pleasure.
On this crazy day. Abe Schoner is a really close friend now. Even though I only see him in the studio, I feel like he has been on the show at least 4 times. you kind of like our Don Rickles, or you know, you just kind of you just show up like, "Hey, Johnny, I was in town. I just came in." You walk into the studio, and we have a couple of other guys from the Red Hook Winery, Mark Schneider and Darren Palace. How are you?
Good. How's it going,
gentlemen? Let me give you some.
Very well.
Can you guys give yourself identify yourselves here so we know we can associate a voice?
This is Mark.
This is Darren. Jersey.
Unfortunately.
Abe.
California.
Mark, we were hanging out at Guga Muga.
Correct.
In the mobile studio.
Yes, in the shower.
In the shower, and we had. You had like an entourage with you. What was that all about? What was going on? Why were you at Guga Muga? What was going on there?
You know, the Guga Muga thing was interesting. Those guys had contacted me for a few months, Peter Eastlake, and at first I was put off just by the name, like, "Oh, Guga Muga, I'm out."
Yeah.
And then Peter reached out to me and explained about the music kind of thing, and he actually got me on board. And the more I found out about it, it was pretty cool. So We agreed to get on board with the program, and I'm happy we did. There was a lot of interesting feedback about the Guga Muga thing, but I think it was pretty cool.
I think everyone had the same reaction. It was just a very esoteric kind of idea that was out there with a weird name associated to it. And then I don't know if it was just through their PR or who they had signed up, whether it was they were like, go on the subway at West 4th Street, and they had those huge billboards.
Yeah.
And the guys at Superfly Presents had done, you know, they do Outside Lands, they do Bonnaroo. And I don't know, what was your, I think the food, we've had a lot of people from the food side of it, and we're saying, you know, running out of food and this. What was it from the beverage point of view?
The first day was a little challenging logistically, and a lot of people were bummed that they couldn't get the logistics of the card and then the tickets and the internet thing was down, so it was a little bit of a drag to start off with, but the concept was great. What we found as a winery, as a local kind of, you know, product, is that the people that came and to our little section of the booth, of the wine booth, they were genuinely interested. So I feel like it was extremely valuable. And the event in itself, there were a lot of people complaining about how it was poorly run, but what I pointed out to a lot of people is like, well, no one was complaining about, you know, the urinals overflowing and there being no water and, you know, being kind of a
exactly
a
it was
disaster.
It was problems that you want to have, which is, you know, I mean, not necessarily want to have, but they were like people were attending and eating and they inherently ran out of food. But you bring up a good point, which is a lot of restaurants and you know, wineries do a lot of events,
mm-hmm.
and you always just have a random anonymous person come up, either looking to gorge themselves or get hammered.
Totally.
And you actually had people that were coming up and engaging you and asking questions.
We've had people come to the winery after that event, which is you know, the whole reason to be there. So. I do tastings all the time, and it really is torture often because you're dealing with the public. They're not interested. They don't care. They just kind of show up. If you give stuff away, people don't pay attention to it. But if you charge, even if it's $2, $4, $10, you know, people will at least want to know what they're drinking or eating. So I think that the concept is really good. I think New Yorkers were not ready to have to wait online and, and have to deal with that kind of normal, big event kind of thing, but
those entitled Park Slope people.
Exactly.
How dare I wait online more than 5 minutes? Darren, how is the last time I was there? The Red Hook was under construction. It seemed like it was almost there. Where are we at?
We're 95% there, I would say. We still have some small aesthetics and things like that, but pretty much totally up and ready to go. We haven't really advertised or done much, but our doors are open weekends, noon till 4, Saturdays and Sundays for tastings, so people can come down and experience. And we have all of our wines there.
And it seems, I don't know if you guys are doing it in this direction, but a great place to have an event.
Mm.
I mean, a wedding. I'm not necessarily like, I don't, just a small
industry
thing.
Stuff.
Right, industry stuff. Yeah,
like tastings and things that are oriented towards, promoting wine and the industry itself. No weddings or things like that. Who knows in the future, but you know, we want to keep it focused on,
it's a winery.
Yeah, our people and the wines.
We've been trying to define that, like the whole tasting room thing, because, you know, I spend my life going to tasting rooms, and we don't want to have an operation that is like a bar or like an event space necessarily.
Yeah.
If people are interested, our point is to embrace what we're doing, but also to support the local community. So, you know, for us, if people come in and they want to have 3 glasses of a wine, I send them to one of the restaurants in Brooklyn or in the city, or send them to a local retailer to buy wine and enjoy it. We want to have more of a forum for like education and just knowledge about the local region and the winery. So the event thing is not really us.
Hey, where's Chris?
Christopher is fishing for salmon in Alaska.
That's hysterical. You know, when Patrick Martin's, you talked about before, does his show on Sundays, I saw Chris. Like, I'm like, did he go rogue? What's he doing? Like, why is he on the show? It's like, Patrick doesn't do beverage stuff, like, wine, spirits, anything. And then I spoke to him, and I guess, what's he, third generation family? Like,
pretty hardcore.
Yeah, it's
and he goes out every season on
They fish 24 hours a day. They fish with the tides, so they only stop fishing when the tides go out. It's pretty hardcore, and they I think they're the smallest sustainable commercial fishery in America.
We're going to be doing some...
Bristol Bay is the most sustainable fishery in the world. They're the only one left.
Are you getting, like, sockeye?
Yeah. Sockeye,
that, like, deep red.
Yeah. Super red.
It's gorgeous high stuff, too. We're going to be doing some tasting today. What are we...
Yes, sir.
Anything local?
Yeah, so we brought two wines. We do, you know, the Red Oak Winery, Abe Scherner, Robert Foley. They're our consultant, the head winemakers at the winery. So most everything that comes in source-wise, fruit, we will split in half, and there'll be two protocols, two different winemaking styles on the same fruit. So we brought the same fruit, a Riesling from Seneca Lake, 2009 vintage, Abe and Bob, so we can taste them side by side. It'll be fun.
Is this the Scholium project?
This is not the Scholium project. Oh. It's the Red Hook Winery.
I just wanted to say, I just wanted to see if I pronounced that right. I think that's, I get it wrong, you know, every time. Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back. Let's try the wine. Let's talk. Let's have the same, and let's, could we approach it the same way we'd approach if we were actually at the winery, the same sort of style?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Morning.
Got no place in such a home, such a soul, such a rough road. I got no place by the wayside, digging holes about waist high. 'Cause when you're stuck in the middle and your wheels aren't turning, and there's so far still though, but the bridge is burning. I've got no faith in a love song to get me through such a rough draw. I got no hope in a room full to say that I'm hopeful. 'Cause when you're stuck in the middle and your wheels aren't turning, and they're so far still low, but the bridge is burning behind you, and over the edge or up ahead I go, running. In such a home, such a soul, such a rough road. 'Cause when you're stuck in the middle and your wheels aren't turning, and they're so far still.
The logistics involved in these tastings are crazy. That's awesome. Matt, what song was that?
That's a song called "The Bridge."
The Bridge.
Yeah.
Is it a newer
yeah,
song?
Yeah, it's I put out a digital 7-inch, so two singles that I'm giving away free on my website throughout the summer.
What digital 7-inch? What
is it? Like a 7-inch is an old. It's like 45 back in the day. Those like the records that had an A and B side.
Yeah.
And to print vinyl these days is pretty expensive. So I'd like to do you know, the digital version of that. So I just give it away online, an A and a B side. So I have two songs that are free, and you know, they'll be on the record that comes out in fall.
And you can get that on iTunes.
The record will be available on iTunes come fall, but my website, and you know, I don't know if you guys are posting that, but It's esmateo.com, esmateo.com.
Awesome. Let's get into this tasting. Mark Mark Schneider, you will be leading this tasting here. We have two gorgeous bottles here in front of us. What's our first tasting here?
Riesling. Two different Rieslings. I always like to give the analogy of giving two artists a handful of paint, different colors, and a piece of canvas and say, paint a tree. And this is a good example of how we've got the same fruit, two different artists, and their expression completely different. It's kind of an odd, the first one, the Bob Foley Riesling from Seneca Lake Vineyard, is a little bit of an oddball wine for Bob. He's pretty mainstream in terms of producer, but this wine was spawned by all of our love for eating raw oysters at Ron Gerlitz's place in Jamesport. So every time when we would go out there, Ron would, bestow upon us a bushel of oysters.
Define mainstream. When you say that, does it mean what everyone else is kind of producing, or more of the flavor, like the grapes people are putting out there, more of the flavor profiles that American market's looking for? Or?
I would say stylistically, ripe flavors, fruit flavors, wines that are not, considered weird by the mainstream population, fairly mainstream wines. Flavors that you would think of when you think of Cabernet or Chardonnay. And Abe is quite different. Abe is more of a maverick in that sense and likes to really experiment with different flavors and techniques, and stylistically, I think, does not try to, encourage fruit flavors in the wines, but more secondary nuances. And we'll let him speak about the two wines. But
all right, let's taste it.
Cool.
And then we'll have Abe.
Natasha should still be
I'm just
around.
Like, for the sake of our radio audience, we're now drinking.
Isn't that illegal? Didn't you used to not be able to?
Wine tasting and radio goes hand in hand.
Nice.
We can define the color here. Maybe can you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so we all started with Bob's wine, the first wine that Mark mentioned. Both wines are golden, which is typical of Riesling. If we're looking at them together, we all seem to have Bob's wine on the left. It's perfect. You start on the left and move to the right. His is a light gold, even a kind of a somewhat dried straw color. And it has bubbles in it. And that's one of the things that is totally unconventional about this wine. It's not that Riesling doesn't get bubbles in it. There's fantastic Rieslings made as sparkling wine. But if I'm not mistaken, Bob does not make sparkling wine.
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's something that is really unconventional with him. Neither Bob nor I work with Riesling in California. I think both of us would agree it is really difficult to grow good Riesling grapes and make good wine from Riesling in California. It's too hot. There's too much sun. It's too hot. There's too much fertility in the soil. The vines need to be beaten down to some degree. And the growing conditions on Long Island are so difficult and so challenging, but the reward is that Bob and I get to make wines that we couldn't make in California.
Now, to sidetrack a second, is the weather we're having now, is this good for Long Island? It's going to push the fruit to a point where it'll subside a little bit later on in the summer and kind of balance out.
And it raises the possibility the grapes might actually ripen. In the past couple of years, it's been really difficult to harvest ripe fruit in Long Island. And that's not so much because of what's happening in October. It's because of what's happening in June and July. So this is perfect.
The challenge, I think, later in the season is going to be the rain, potential for rain. That's the real challenge in this region.
And just the rain, I mean, to the audience, say what rain does to fruit,
makes it rot. That's the worst thing. And the in California, where I work, where Bob works, where we spend most of our time, where both of us learned how to make wine, there's a kind of technical term, disease pressure. There's almost no disease pressure. We all work hard to make sure that the grapes don't rot, but it is easy.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I opened Polino's in the Bowery, and Keith McNally flew everyone out from California. Nate Appleman was the executive chef, and I was dealing with pretty much mostly everyone was from Frisco and Northern California, and we're used to calling a farmer the night before and showing up with the most pristine fruit, vegetables, and they come here to New York and they meet me, and I'm like, yo, how's it going, guys? What's up? Yeah, nice to meet you. Jason Cuccio, what's up? Yeah, you got Baldor, you got, it's like, and the fruit shows up. You just kind of, there's a luxury that you necessarily maybe take for granted or what, but there is a luxury out in California with growing.
There is an absolute luxury, and I have learned so much by working with the fruit from Long Island, working with the farmers. We have it so easy, and those of us who've only worked there, we have no idea how easy we have it. The struggle to produce ripe fruit and to make good wine on Long Island, it's one of the kind of secret stories in the winemaking world, but the struggle is absolutely remarkable.
How you doing otherwise, Abe? I haven't seen you. Last time I saw you was about 4 or 5 months ago.
But that's perfect, isn't it?
No, I just mean your name comes up a lot.
I'm doing so well. I meet people at your show, and I love that. That's one of the things that I like so much about doing the show.
Well, your schedule, are you going like back and forth every 2-3 weeks? And
I want to come back to these wines, but I'm here because I'm on the way to France. I'm on the way to France to bottle wine at a project there where I'm a winemaker who runs things in a similar way to the way that Darren and Christopher and I work together. There are people who live there, who work there year-round. I come in every so often, check on things, give my suggestions.
Internal audit. Mark, can we go into our next wine? Or
sure, let's do it. So this is from the same vineyard, same grapes. Same literally, vineyard. they were just separated and, you know, treated in a totally different way with Abe's protocol. You know, when you walk through the winery, you'll see the barrels and the tanks.
That's awesome.
They all have like AS or BF, and that's our kind of secret cipher.
And Chris is like hanging off of them with like siphoning out in the top. It's cool. I mean, that's a cool part about going down there. It's like, you know, it's just you have that experience that you don't find here in New York at all.
Yeah, I mean, what we're really hoping is that, you know, it's great to have Abe and Bob, and that's crucial, but it shows the diversity of the fruit. And what we really want to do is hope that there's a similar stream of just similarity between the two wines. These are two relatively crazy wines. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, we're going to make 10,000 cases of these and try to have them all over the world. But it's to have a distinct product that is from this region and to show that great wine can be made from this region is huge for us.
Okay, this next one has a little more golden color to it.
And can I emphasize something? We're pouring and drinking again.
Is that
the wines don't look anything alike. They don't smell alike. They don't taste anything. I mean, what Mark said is absolutely right. There is a family resemblance between them, but it's almost like two siblings of different sexes, different heights, that one of them likes to play the piano, the other one likes to beat people up on the football field. That's how different these wines are from each other. And I want to emphasize, the fruit came in from one vineyard on one day, and then we divided the fruit up, and each of us took, Bob and I, took our portions of the fruit in different directions. It's the only winery in the world that I know of where that happens, where you can taste two wines made from the same fruit, harvested on the same day, from the same vineyard, but that have gone in these completely different directions.
So am I getting oak on this? What are we picking up here? This
no.
Vanilla? What is? I mean, there's no oak, and this is stainless.
It's all neutral. Well,
what is it? I'm getting some kind of vanilla.
It was fermented in neutral oak, 500-liter puncheon, and also aged in neutral oak. But back to what Abe was saying about everything gets split up. In 2009, we had 48 active fermentations going on at one time at the winery.
How do you manage? Yeah, I mean,
that's why Christopher is hanging off things.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. He's in Alaska. He's hooking on to salmon and he's hooking on to barrels in New York. But how do you? I mean, is it old? Like, because you're bringing New World operations traditions to it with computer programs, spreadsheets. I mean, how do you keep track of everything that's going on?
Sloppily.
Well,
I mean, it looks cool. You know, you have a big ledger, but I mean, when you have so much, there's so much money at stake, and there's so much investing in the fruit and the turnaround on it. I mean, how do you manage that stuff?
It's not easy, but I think making it and working with people that you appreciate. I mean, you know, when Abe's in town, and we're so focused and driven towards our goals. And we all take part in making the wines. You know, Mark's there crushing, and we have people come down and help us out, and it just makes things easier. I mean, it's a lot of work, but we're all very close, so I think it helps.
The key is blue tape, by the way.
Blue tape.
Blue tape.
And these are also really, really small lots of wine. It's not like there's a 5,000 case lot of this.
Yeah.
You know, these are like 20 to 50 case lots. So even though there's a lot of them, it's pretty easy to manage from that perspective.
Anyone that wants to buy, you know, restaurants and stuff, how should we approach getting it?
Well, wholesale wise, they're distributed through Angel Share, which is my other kind of my day job.
Okay.
And we really try to support the local community. We work on projects together. As a matter of fact, my biggest success story is meeting Marcus Samuelson at Googa Mooga.
Oh.
And at one of the kind of press things, and we talked about community and working together. And, you know, he wants to do a Red Hook wine for Red Rooster. And, you know, that's what we're all about. We're not about taking over the world. We're about trying to really elevate people's perception of this region.
Have you guys been to that Pock Pock?
Yes.
It's like, what you've been there recently? It's all the rage now. What did you have there?
I think I ate most of the menu, actually. But
what's all the hype about? I mean, I'm just wondering, like, other than the obvious stuff that we read in the papers.
Andy was Food and Wine Best Chef of 2011, I believe, or 2010. But I know his restaurant's from Portland because I have many
Which
friends out in Portland.
Amazing restaurant in town.
Yeah, and so Puck Puck was from Portland and eventually migrated here, and I guess that's the local or the natural step is either Brooklyn to Portland or Portland to Brooklyn, but it's very good food and it's well executed, quite traditional Thai style.
And we can follow you guys on Twitter.
Yes.
Any Facebook? There's a band called Red Hook Wine. I don't know.
I saw that.
Yeah, when I first met Abe, I was doing research like 8 months ago, whatever, and I said to him, I said, I don't want to sound kind of ignorant to you, but I was like, do you guys know that? And they have the same, almost the same.
They're better marketers than we are.
They have the same branding as you, kind of too.
No, they use our bottle.
Yeah,
as
they took a picture of our bottle for their album cover.
Which, and I was like, did you guys know? I was like,
if they sell a million albums,
but
we'll
do you guys know about this? And
cool.
The facility, there's the smaller one. Is that still, you still need that? That's like the processing area?
No.
There's like two facilities. Oh, you've eliminated that from the equation.
Yeah, we're incubating some other local guys, Jack from Brooklyn, and they make Sorrel, this Jamaican fortified hibiscus tea thing,
pretty,
kind of thing.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And so we're helping them get their business started in that space. We kept the space because it's got all the infrastructure, and now we've moved over to Pier 41, and we love it there. Like I said, it's a big space. You overlook Statue of Liberty, and it's pretty cool. We can kind of spread out a little bit and get people in and focus on the wines.
Yeah, we don't have barrels 8 high now. We have barrels 2 high, so it's a beautiful space.
And anyone that wants to check out the place, I'll go on the website. You could go on my Twitter feed, at the Jason Colucci. You'll see some old photos when we did the tour there with our friends from Terroir. Mark, Darren, Abe. First of all, thank you, Abe, for all your love
to
the Morning After and coming in here and giving us your time. I know you guys work a crazy schedule, 2 jobs, East Coast, West Coast. Let's take a break. Matt Sousa is going to come in. We're going to do an original song. We're going to talk to you a little bit about you were at Bonnaroo, correct?
Yeah, I was at Bonnaroo.
So were we. We'll
talk. I know. We should have hooked up.
Awesome.
2013.
All right.
Thank you.
Morning After.
Love is a game I will watch you play, standing by myself again. And as the days go by, I will sit and wonder why you are standing by somebody else's side. And as long as you're away, so long as I'm around, well, I'll be searching for someone like you. No, she never will be found. Thank you. is a game that I will watch you win. Standing by myself, myself again. And as the days go by, I will sit and wonder why you are standing by somebody else's side. And as long as you're away, so long as I'm around, I'll be searching for someone.
We're back,
like
morning after.
You.
Matt Susich is preparing now, but I have to go into the Mark Schneider. You have to tell this story. So, you know, we talked about Billy Joel. I'm a huge Billy Joel fan, New Yorker, yada yada yada. But the last play at Shea, which is a documentary that everyone should see, which was Billy Joel's played the last concert at Shea Stadium
before they took it down. Yeah.
And they talk, you know, it talks about a lot of the history with Robert Moses and Queens and Long Island and the whole, you know, Great Gatsby kind of like dynamic between them. Can you talk a little bit about when McCartney showed up there last minute?
It was a pretty magical night. I mean, it was really touch and go for a long time, because Paul couldn't make it there in time, and you know, there's union curfews and all that kind of stuff. So I called, you know, my best friend I grew up with, Jim Flood, and he's lieutenant to the commissioner. Hopefully he won't get fired.
So New York.
Now
I
he's
love
fired
it.
Tomorrow. But anyway, he called someone who was, you know, one of the drivers for the commissioner or something like that, and they wound up getting a police escort, and they closed the highway from JFK to Shea. And got Paul there in, I think, like 9 or 10 minutes.
It got from JFK to there, like 5 minutes. It was like, yeah, it was a cool story. And what did you sort of work operations?
Yeah, I was guitar and piano tech, you know, for bands for a long time. So I was there, and I remember Max Lubiere, who's part of the winery as well, and Billy's close confidant. You know, we were back and forth, and I just got a text here, H-E-R-E. And I mean, you know, the eagle has landed. So we knew it was going to be pretty magical.
Well, Matt, thank you for coming out, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
We didn't cross paths at Bonnaroo.
Nope.
But I feel like the venues that, well, when you're at Bonnaroo, there's a lot of crazy things going on, obviously, other than drug use and everything. they, you know, there's a big stage, the It stage, the Witch stage, whatever we want to call it. And then, like, the Chili Peppers will play, like, the huge stage. And then there's a lot of other areas where, you know, the guys at Bonnaroo do their homework with music, where you can actually see, have an intimate experience with a band, you know, a single, you know, musician by themselves, or you know, whatever it is. And you were playing one of those areas, correct?
Yeah, I was at a show on Saturday night, actually.
You could double book. Double booked.
They had me up against the Chili Peppers. And so my crowd was not, you know, it wasn't a massive audience for the Saturday night show, but I also played Sunday afternoon. You know, I had my band down there, and so we had a lot of fun, and I posted some videos online. It was such a thrill. And Sunday, I essentially opened for the Beach Boys, which was pretty nuts, because I was on a stage that was across from the main stage. The cafe tent was across from the main stage, basically 2 football fields away. You could hear, like, Gary Clark Jr. finished. As soon as he finished, I went on. As soon as I finished, 5 minutes later, the Beach Boys, and we're talking the original Beach Boys, you know, Brian Wilson is touring with them right now, and it's just unbelievable to say that, you know, 5 minutes after, I'm unplugging my guitar, and there's the Beach Boys across from me.
And there's a million stories in Bonnaroo, like, just kind of going there. When I left, I'm leaving the tent, and everyone's passed out, and it's raining, and I see there's a guy getting in. We're in the media artist area. There's a guy getting in there. He's all flustered. He's got sand all over him, and his wife, she's all pissed off. And then there's like 2 people, and I go knock on their window. I'm like, hey, how's it going? I was like, are you guys leaving right now? They're like, yeah, we're going to go get some food. And I was like, can you drop me off at the Holiday Inn? They're like, okay. So I get in the thing, and it turns out he's, I don't know if Brian Wilson's kid or whatever. He's of the Beach Boys. But that's like kind of Bonnaroo in a nutshell. You'll be sitting next to somebody,
yeah,
and it'll be random. But
I'll tell you, the most important people I met, not important, everybody's important. The most interesting people I met were online for the bathroom and for the beer.
Yeah.
Like, I met the most, like, it was like, I'm from New York, you know, I'm going to Bonnaroo, I'm going to talk to everybody, you know, I'm networking, like,
and everyone's
crazy.
Everyone's nice, not necessarily important or less important people or whatever, but everyone you talk to, that's not 20 years old,
right,
has a story.
Absolutely, yeah.
And,
they're either camping or they're, you know, they drove down an RV and all that.
But the interesting thing about, I don't know if you agree with this, but a lot of people told me that I was there with Nick Africano specifically, that Bonnaroo is a music festival. Like, everyone that performed musically, like, really puts it out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Like, the bigger bands?
I saw, you know, I was not disappointed once. And, you know, one of the most amazing things was seeing all these bands. It just blew my mind. First of all, going back to the Googa Mooga thing, like, you know, I have nothing but, you know, respect for these guys that put it on. You got to think back to when Bonnaroo was a new festival, you know. They were breaking into new territory with Googa Mooga. And so, you know, you can't expect it to be flawless. And so, you know, I think they hit the nail on the head. This is a great festival and it's going to keep going and it's only going to get better. They're going to fix the flaws, you know what I mean? And so I think that's it was a great thing, and Bonnaroo was flawless. Like, the whole weekend we're just walking around saying, how do they pull this off? This is such a massive thing.
It's a city.
You know, and then going from Bon Iver to Civil Wars, and the soundtrack for the walk to stages was The Shins. It's like there's so much music happening at the same time. All these people are in one place for one weekend. It's just
you grew up in Queens.
I grew up in Queens. Yeah.
And when did you just get into music randomly, or
I was an athlete through high school. I didn't start playing guitar till I was in college, and you know,
because you wanted to hook up with a girl, or
no? You know, my best friend picked up a guitar, and it was like one of those, you know, you can do it, I can do it type things, and so I just taught myself, and you know, I just kept practicing, and I, you know, then I started writing, and you know, it took me a while. I've been at it for a while
to get a style,
to be confident, you know, to figure out what my sound was. And now, you know, a couple of years ago I figured it out, and you know, I've been hustling ever since. So it's been a busy 2 years.
And God bless you. I mean, Bonnaroo's not, you know, I mean, that's what you want to play.
That's right. Absolutely. It was a thrill.
So what are we going to hear now?
This is a song that's going to be on my new album. It's called Singing Fairytale Blues.
Awesome. Joe, let's let this ride out the show. I want to sign off before we go into it. You can follow me on Twitter at the Jason Colucci. Like the Morning After page on Facebook. Tune in next week, Sunday, 3:00. Matt?
Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Taking an extra breath before I speak. There's something to be said for the depth in brevity. And I'm making moves to better myself. I was just hoping that you could help. 'Cause I'm not a well-read man, but I read my share of fairy tales. And I've heard this one over and over and over again. Now before I go busting down these castle walls, you ought to know who and I what for. 'Cause I'm no prince, I'm just an idiot. Fell in love with the damsel in distress. It's like I said, I'm not a well-read man, but I read my share of fairy tales. And I've heard this one over and over and over again. And I'm not accusing you using me, I'm just bruised and beat. So when you finally meet that prince, yeah, the one that I refuse to believe exists, I'd like to shake his hand beneath a shade of green and ask him what it is he's really seen. Like I said, I'm not a well-read man, but I read my share of fairy tales, and I've heard this one over and over and over again. Yeah, I've heard this one over and over and over again. Oh yeah, I've heard this one over and over and over again.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.